Welcome to another episode of the Community Connections Podcast. Joining me today is the Director of Provider Services for Hospice of Davidson County, Elizabeth McNeil. Welcome to the podcast, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much, Cole.
Elizabeth has been with the organization for quite a few years and has been, I would say, but really it's the nurse practitioner here at Hospice of Davidson County for over, is it 12 years?
Coming up on that. Yes, I started in 2011 in January. Yep.
Yes. Yes. So been with us for quite a while, and we're getting back to what we've called our little education series for this season of the podcast, talking about hospice appropriateness, readiness based on different diagnoses. And a lot of people, when they hear the word hospice, they think of one diagnosis, and that diagnosis is cancer. It is a very common thing in hospice patients here in our community that they have a diagnosis of cancer, but it's probably the most broad and difficult diagnosis that we can discuss. And so we had to bring on the best to give us some insight into what this looks like for our patients and our community. So Elizabeth, just, I guess, let's start here. Can you talk about what you see when it comes to not just readiness, but maybe some of the access to hospice care in cancer patients?
Sure. So that is probably the most prevalent diagnosis category that we see of all of our patients. And it is very wide and broad in terms of different kinds of cancers and what prognosis means in each of those different individual prognoses and diagnoses. So really hospice care, I mean, we've talked about this some in your other sessions, that it's appropriate for anyone who has a life expectancy of 6 months or less, and also who has goals that are in line with stopping things like aggressive medical treatments in terms of hospitalizations, chemotherapy, radiation kinds of things, specific to patients with a cancer diagnosis. And appropriateness really comes in two categories. There's the medical piece of when life expectancy is 6 months or less, but there's also the piece about readiness emotionally, psychosocially, to be ready to have that purely comfort-directed care, especially within a disease process where there are so many emerging options for ongoing treatment, even when there's not going to be hope for a cure. And oftentimes we see patients who medically have a life expectancy that would make them appropriate for hospice services, but there are still things available to them that would fall under that category of things that would not be covered under the hospice benefit. Things like ongoing cancer therapies, chemotherapies, hormonal therapies, radiation, things like that. So overall, nationally, not just our hospice here or not just for cancer patients, but nationally, 50% of patients have hospice care for 18 days or less. So we really do see late referrals. And some of that is that piece about being not just medically ready, but emotionally ready to make that transition into purely comfort-directed care.
One of the things that you said, I think, was curious was the choice that people make to continue care, even if they're maybe medically appropriate. Is that a recognition that some of the treatments are meant to just keep them a little bit healthier, help them to live a little bit longer, to have a little bit longer of a prognosis? Is that what you're just talking about? When I guess we call that more palliative treatment.
Sure, absolutely. And those would be things that would be directed at trying to increase life expectancy. And it gets tough to determine sometimes how much life expectancy that might create or what quality is like during those times. So those are important conversations to be having along the way about what the expected outcome, setting goals for those treatments might be, because patients with a cancer diagnosis, probably more than any other medical diagnosis we see, have a lot of options for ongoing treatments that may or may not significantly extend their time, but it might. But it's things that wouldn't be available to continue under hospice care, and palliative care is fantastic. It's an area where I think some patients end up going that route because they do have a desire to continue other therapies. And as long as they've got good conversations around what the goals of those therapies are and what the expectations are, and that's what's right for them, that's absolutely a good fit and what we would want for them. And it really has to do a lot with goals, where someone is, and what is most important to them. So I think it's easy for a patient to maybe misunderstand and think that palliative care is an alternative to hospice, where you still get to have all the other treatments too. And it is a great resource. It's an area that, unfortunately, our medical system as a whole isn't set up to provide large volume palliative care to all the patients who might benefit from that. It's available to anyone who has a serious illness. And I do think earlier referrals and earlier palliative care could easily lead to earlier hospice referrals, especially if a patient with cancer is wanting to continue some treatments, but they have the ability to be with a palliative care provider who can help keep a close check on how those treatments are going and if they're getting benefit or not, or if there are options that might be more beneficial for them. It really is a very medical model. And by that, I mean, it's usually provided by a doctor or a nurse practitioner. And it's usually about a visit a month to try to meet some symptom management needs or goals of care discussions, having conversations around whether their pain management is adequate, if they're having trouble with shortness of breath, with anxiety or nausea, and just trying to figure out next steps about their goals and how well those are being met. Whereas under hospice care, there's a lot more attention that's available, a lot more physical presence in the home with frequent nursing visits, aid visits to help with bathing and personal care, and helping to teach families how to provide the physical care in the home. That's something that we hear is a frequent need for patients coming under our care, is they really are needing assistance with how to provide the physical care and not just with the medication management. And that's somewhere where hospice is more aligned to help with those needs.
One of the things that I wanted to discuss today with you is that in our society, cancer touches so many lives, and there are a lot of, you hear phrases like, fighting till the end, and you hear those things. And as a hospice advocate, as you are as well, we don't look at hospice care as giving up or whatever that might look like. And this is not to dissuade people who receive treatments, right, in any way, right? But for those that choose to stop treatments a little bit earlier, I guess I'll invite you to explain a little bit why medically, because we know, for those of that are listening that don't know, some of these treatments are very taxing on the body and can really, really be difficult for people to have a high quality of life through this treatment. So can you talk a little bit about what some of this looks like and why sometimes people do choose to end treatments a little bit earlier when it comes to some of the more aggressive cancer diagnoses?
Sure, sure. So that is something that we hear about a lot when we're getting initial referrals, that the reason that patients are stopping treatment. Sometimes it's because there's progression despite treatment and there aren't any further options. But a lot of times we do hear that patients are interested in stopping treatments because they have bothersome side effects. And sometimes even with the assistance of palliative care and some good symptom management, the burden on them with to still maybe have pain, to have trouble with nausea and things like that, that you know, even though there's still options available to continue some palliative treatments, they might be experiencing side effects that are difficult for them. And sometimes we do see some of those side effects lessen a bit once those treatments are stopped. And every once in a while, we'll have patients saying that they've gotten hospice care, they feel better, and then they start thinking about those treatments again. And if they are feeling like that's something that's right for them to try to start again, they can sure leave hospice services at any time and seek that out. But I often, not often, I do have that conversation about how they felt while they were on those treatments, and that if they feel better now, it isn't necessarily because they're healthier overall and more treatment would be helpful to them. It's because they are responding well to a comfort-directed approach.
Would like to move to sort of what we planned for this episode, because even as we were joking before, this topic is just so vast that we could spend a couple hours on this episode if we really wanted to. But due to that sort of big picture concept of what some of this looks like when it comes to specifically cancer diagnoses and hospice services, there are some barriers to accessing hospice care, whether they're systematic or they're societal, cultural type barriers. It is interesting that this diagnosis in particular has some barriers that maybe some of the other diagnoses don't have with hospice services. So could I just have you kind of talk about some of those barriers that you see with cancer diagnoses accessing hospice care?
Sure. I think because there are so many new and emerging ongoing therapies, it can really feel for some patients like they're giving up if they don't seek those treatments out. And there could sure be a lot of feelings around, especially younger patients, typically with some of the other diagnoses that we encounter, things like heart disease, lung disease, any longer term chronic illness that has reached its end stage. Oftentimes those patients are much older than some of the patients we see with a cancer diagnosis. When we have younger patients, it can be very hard if they have young families, if they have things in life that they have wanted to accomplish that they haven't had the opportunity to. I think it's much, much harder for them to move into that mindset of not seeking out any further treatment or any further hospital stays or anything like that, anything that might help prolong, even if there is a sacrifice in quality during that time. Oftentimes they're the patient population that would find extra burden of treatment acceptable to try to have any time, however limited it might be, if they are younger or with young families and in situations where they're not feeling like they've lived a full life and there are more things that they want to do.
I think in hospice care in general, the younger patients have some more of those environmental factors surrounding them, right? Whether there is treatment available or not. Mm-hmm. We deal with that. And a lot of people, just in my experience as a counselor, a lot of people worry about the children, and rightfully so. It's a really difficult time. If you listen to our last episode, we just talked about grief through the development stages for our youth. And I think it's just one of those things that people it's another layer to preventing people from accessing hospice care. And this isn't a plug to say that hospice care is the right choice for everybody. Individualized care is the right way to go. And so the decision can be different for people. But I think, Elizabeth, you would agree that people who could benefit from services, including increasing quality of life and increasing the amount of time, right? It's sometimes quality and quantity, right? Mm-hmm. That sometimes we know that when we're doing comfort directed measures and we're not putting those heavy treatments on our bodies, that we actually can live longer, right? And so it is an option. And, you know, so we do look at it as an option for some people that feel like they are ready. And Elizabeth, I really appreciate you discussing the barriers and even early on talking about sort of what the process can look like for families. And this isn't an easy topic to discuss. If you're listening to this, you most likely have had someone touched by cancer. And so I appreciate you being willing to approach this and give some insight into that. I guess to sort of start to wrap up here, what would you say to families, patients, their loved ones who are trying to make the decision, who are getting to the point where it might be time to change the goals of care? What would you say to them when they're trying to make that decision between continuing the more curative directed treatment or palliative directed treatment versus comfort directed treatment with hospice care?
Or for anybody who's at a point where they're talking about those kinds of choices, almost always when someone is reaching the point of thinking about those things medically, they're there. So it really comes down to having those conversations about what the goals look like, what they would like for however much time they have, whether it's days, weeks, months, what they would like that to look like, where they would like to spend their time and energy. And if going in and out of the hospital or back and forth to an oncology center for treatment is taking away energy, but not giving them good time with their families or whatever it is that they enjoy, hobbies, whatever brings them joy and comfort in life, if they're expending more energy than is acceptable to them, having treatments and needing rest after that, then hospice is likely a good option for them. Or if they're needing more physical care and assistance with how to provide care for themselves or their loved ones as they lose ability to provide that care for themselves, having the increased attention that's available through hospice is going to be a good option for them and certainly worth discussing, because all of our patients, as hard as we try to get them as much time as possible, people who live long enough to pass naturally are very likely to have a time where they're not able to provide their own physical care. They're not able to get in and out of bed to the bathroom and showering and even toileting. Those kinds of things become harder and harder as people get more and more fragile. And that's an area where hospice can be very helpful, not just with the symptom management piece with medications, but in how to provide physical care and how to provide a physical environment that allows them to have the most comfort and enjoyment out of the last time of their life.
Thank you for discussing that particular piece, Elizabeth. I think it's important that we recognize that shared decision-making is an important piece to you feeling comfortable with the medical care you're receiving. And so that's what we're discussing on here, right? Is being involved and feeling like you have agency in your medical treatment and in the options presented before you. And hospice is another one of those options of really great medical care. And so we wanted to make sure today that we talked about, again, it's a very large piece of what hospice treats in terms of diagnoses with cancer, but it's probably one of the most complex at the same time. And so if you have any questions about hospice services, we spent a lot of time talking about the medical, and thank you, Lizzie, for touching on the psychosocial and emotional piece and that recognition that usually the medical piece is there first, followed by being ready psychosocially, emotionally, and what that decision looks like. So thank you for that. And as always, if you have any questions about what hospice care is or what hospice treatment can do for you or your loved one, you can visit our website, hospiceofdavidson.org, or give us a call, 336-475-5444.